Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure.
Cheers.
Cheers to sleepovers.
Hey. I'm sitting here in a mud mask, and Liv has a strawberry peel-off mask that I hope isn't going in your mouth.
So I'm going to level with you. I put a little bit on my lips, and now that it's, like, drying out, it's, like, pulling my lip back, and it feels really bad.
Oh. I'm so sorry.
But I also feel, like, very, like, girly and rejuvenated, so right. I'm living for it.
Right.
We've got our Prosecco.
I have a calming lavender mask.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I don't know if it's meant to calm my skin or my soul, but I need both.
Both is good. But yeah, it is a girly sleepover kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
It is a... I mean, let's... Let's be real. There's one reason why we're watching this tonight.
Is it just for the Duke of Hastings?
It's just for the Duke
of Hastings. Oh, okay, okay. At first I thought there was some, like, larger, more significant reason.
The most significant reason is the Duke of Hastings.
Okay, but I will posit one other reason when we talk about our general feelings about the show.
Is it Julie Andrews?
No, actually.
What? Okay, that's my other reason.
No, it's Lady Danbury.
Touché.
But we'll get to that in a bit. What is the vibe, my dearest Liv?
We are drinking cupcake Prosecco.
The sweetest of all Proseccos.
The sweetest, girliest, cheapest Prosecco we could find. We are living our best life.
Mm-hmm.
We have teacups that match our little Muppet characters
on our pink logo. And teal teacups.
I dyed my hair pink, so now I really look like really my good. Gremlin. Thanks. It kind of washed out a little bit, but I got some pink shampoo that I think might mm-hmm. deposit some color back in it.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I am not going to dye my hair teal. Sorry. I started dyeing my hair just this past year, and it's like a very natural looking auburn, mm-hmm. and even that was like a huge step for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm ever going to do a crazy color. I feel like I should have taken the boat of quarantine, but I also didn't want to go out and get my hair dyed during quarantine.
Yeah, I didn't do it until after quarantine. Like, they were like, you don't have to wear masks anymore, and I was like, cool, pink hair! Like,
yeah.
It was like, things like really went back to normal, and for some reason that was what made me want to dye my hair. But, yeah, so...
We are going to be living... I am living full throttle hot girl summer.
Yes.
I'm ready.
We're about to do our nails.
Yes.
With the
really cheap Target stick-on gel that, honest to God, both looks really good and lasts, like, a good long time.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm ever going back.
I've been doing... I found this set of, like, press-on nails. They're, like... plasticky kind of like press on. They look matte. Mm-hmm. I found them on Amazon. It was a pack. There's like 14 sets of nail colors for like, oh man, that got stuck in my mask. Sorry, my hair's stuck in my mask. No! But yeah, it's like 14 different colors for like $20 and I got that.
Nice.
And you can reuse them and I've been using that and I like it a lot. But long nails are just hard to function with sometimes.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I've never done long nails. I've always done, I don't know how to say regular length nails.
Mm-hmm.
My nails always look a regular length.
When I, right before Kyle and I got engaged, I knew that the engagement was coming. Because my friend was like, hey, let's go get our nails done. And I was like, I'm good. I don't really feel like he proposed to me at Dragon Con. And if you don't know what Dragon Con is, it's kind of like Comic Con, but it's in Georgia. So I was dressing up as a character from Dragon Age. And I was like, I'm going to have on like armor and stuff. I was like, I don't need to have girly nails. I'm going to be a warrior. And she was like, no, we should get our nails done. I was like, I don't need to. And she was like, we're getting our nails done. And I was like, oh. But yeah, so I got like fake nails put on for that. And then after that, I just like kept going.
You were sold.
Yeah. I had them for like a really long time.
Yeah. Oh, so all that to say, this is like the ultimate sleepover vibe. And I think that that's fitting, given that we are finally going to do what we've talked about doing for a long time and do our first non-movie.
Yes.
We are going to binge watch us some Bridgerton. It and by is... binge watch, I mean divide into two parts.
Yes. This is the Bingeton, if you will. So Bingeton part one. So the way we're going to do this is we're going to divide it. Episodes 1 through 4 will be discussed here, mm-hmm. and episodes 5 through 8 will be discussed later.
Yes.
Because that kind of centers around... If you haven't watched Bridgerton yet, first of all, where have you been? But second of all...
Probably hanging out with their Y chromosomes, let's be real.
Probably. but if you haven't seen Bridgerton yet, just know... Nothing is off limits. We will be discussing spoilers.
Yep.
So, if you do not want Bridgerton spoiled for you, oh my god, this is pulling my face so hard now. sorry, my mask is drying and I'm just like...
You're literally going to have to peel this off in the middle of like our intro.
I'm so excited. oh my god, I completely lost my train of thought.
We're going to spoil Bridgerton. Yeah. I'm going to say it wrong now that we've talked about it as...
Bridgerton.
Yeah. We're going to spoil Bridgerton. Mm-hmm. But I guess I've only watched the show through once. I assume you've only watched it through once,
yes.
too.
Yes. Yeah, I have.
Watched it with a friend. I guess what were you anticipating before you saw it the first time? And then what was your general impression the first time you watched it?
Well, here's the thing. I was a little worried. I am not a stickler for historical accuracy unless you present yourself as something that is trying to be historically accurate. Mm-hmm. If you're like trying to be period and you mess up, I'll notice and I'll be like, you fool. So what I liked is that this show was like really like in your face about being like vaguely Regency era, but not really caring that much about it.
Yes. Much like the romance genre in general.
Right. Which I enjoy because I think it... I like that it doesn't take itself too seriously. It just has fun. I wasn't really sure what to expect. Basically, I saw a picture of the Duke of Hastings and I was like, you know what? We're gonna give this a go. And then I did. And then, like, everything I've ever watched ever... I was like, I'm going to watch this personally by myself for fun as a me show. Like 5 minutes later, Kyle walks in. He's like, what are you watching? And I'm like, Bridgerton. By the time... So, of course, he just sits down and starts watching it. So, like, several episodes in, he is way more invested than I am. He's, like, looking at me like, I just care so much about Daphne and the Duke of Hastings. I want Daphne and Simon to be together. So, yeah, that was really fun. But I had very, like, the only other expectation I had going in, I knew it was a Shonda Rhimes show, mm-hmm. and I was never a huge fan of Grey's Anatomy.
I never watched Grey's Anatomy.
I didn't watch it religiously. What I saw didn't impress me that much. Mm-hmm. So I actually had kind of low expectations just because I knew that Grey's Anatomy was the thing she was, like, famous for.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I'm probably not gonna like this show because it's just gonna be like, I didn't know what it was gonna be.
Yeah.
Okay,
so she did Scandal as well, correct?
I have not seen Scandal, but I think that's correct.
Did she do How to Get Away with Murder, or am I crazy?
Let's find out.
I don't remember.
Let's find out.
I remember my friends really enjoyed How to Get Away with Murder. I don't think they were the biggest fans of Scandal.
I watched How to Get Away with Murder, but I didn't watch the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I only watched a couple episodes.
So, would you say you were overall pleasantly surprised?
I was pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
Let's see what else Shonen Rhimes has done.
I guess while you're kind of pulling that up.
Shonen Rhimes is very pretty.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't really seen a picture of her. I've seen her name everywhere, but...
Shonda Land!
Oh my god!
What?
I take back everything bad I've ever said about Shonda Rhimes.
Because
she had a hand. She was the writer of Princess Diaries 2 Royal Engagement.
Yep. Oh my gosh, that explains so
much. Doesn't that explain
much
so
about
much?
Bridgerton.
Doesn't it?
It explains everything.
She was the executive producer of How to Get Away with Murder.
Okay, so okay.
She did Scandal.
I knew she had some sort of hand in that, so
yeah.
I still have yet to watch both of those shows. But I think I appreciate when a show knows what it is, and I think Bridgerton, mm-hmm. for the most part,
I think it knows
what
exactly
it
what it is. Yeah.
So my coming into this, I was ecstatic for this show. Mm-hmm. I was incredibly hyped for this show, just because any person who knows me, knows that I am a Jane Austen freak, that I live for colorful florals, and that I am just like you, and that I either want total period accuracy or I want an absolutely ridiculous tropey fantasy, and I was expecting that, and that's mostly what I got. I see that the removal process of the mask has begun. How are you?
Hear it, like,
I can hear it peeling off a little bit, so I'm kind of curious. We'll have to go back later and hear it.
Ew, that's so gross. It's a really pretty pink, though.
I love look. Okay,
look at all the like little
hot take. I love skin. I love looking at masks when you peel them off. It's so weird. I don't like watching videos of like other people doing stuff like that, but when it's me, I don't know why that's so different and why
I'm gross.
So okay,
like
with
nothing
them.
Like this like phases me at all. I watch Dr. Pimple Popper like while I eat food, and Kyle's
oh,
like,
God.
"What's wrong with you?"
No,
I'm like, I love Dr. Pimple Popper.
Absolutely not.
Ooh, ow. Ow.
I'm kind of glad you decided to do this while we were recording.
Oh my god.
Bro, I don't ever have, like, everyone's always, like, saying they have the worst experiences peeling these things off. They never, like, hurt me that bad. I don't know if I'm just, like, metal as hell, or...
I have a bunch of little peach fuzzes, and then...
Oh, like, girl, you're preaching to the choir.
Ooh. Ooh. That
was,
almost came off in one piece. Look at this.
That was
you
that
could
was
like
good.
Reconstruct my face.
That
from
was
this.
The most satisfying part of that was
that,
that
was great.
It came off in one.
That was great.
So
sorry,
Bridgerton. Sorry, that was me going.
There's still like a few little places that aren't dry enough.
You also have the center of your between the bridge between your eyebrows. Yeah, this was just like, I saw the trailer for this and I went, oh, this is the most Lizzie aesthetic,
mm-hmm.
I've ever seen put to film. And for the most part, that turned out kind of correct. Mm-hmm. I think there's some things in here that aren't quite me, but it's okay. These aren't my favorite storytelling tropes in that all my favorite stories have these tropes,
mm-hmm.
but they're tropes that when I'm willing to, like, you know, completely give in to something mm-hmm. ridiculous for a while,
yeah,
this is what I want.
Yeah. There are so many moments in this that, like, really exceeded my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get started, was there anything that, like, disappointed you?
Yes. So, I mean, we'll talk about...
Not, let's say plot disappointments, but, like, any, like... Like, general, like... You know.
Excuse me.
other things that maybe, like, you were expecting something and then disappointed.
So, we've kind of hinted at this and maybe talked about this in other podcasts. I was expecting this to basically be a Brandy Cinderella blind cast moment mm-hmm. of just total fantasy. And the introduction of it being, no, this is revisionist history in episode 3. Which, I mean, for the most part, you can kind of, like, hear and then sort of forget about. It's not too big a deal. But that did disappoint me a little bit.
Yeah. I feel like if you're gonna do, like, a revisionist history and deal with race, you should actually deal with it instead of just, like, lightly touching on it yeah. and then pretending like it was never ever a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it just felt so swept under the rug.
Yes. So, that for me was really, that was really the big thing. I guess I'm trying to think if there was anything else. Yeah.
They were like, this is going to be a diverse cast.
Not really.
I was like, I see white people. I see black people. That's it. Yeah. Like, there was no... I kept looking around. I was like, I don't see, like, any other,
yeah.
like, ethnicity or race represented, really.
Well, and in making it a historical revisionism... You can't have, like, a Brandy Cinderella where, like, even the families are, like, multiracial in
right.
in a way that
mm-hmm.
isn't impossible, but is clearly, it's clearly the result of blind casting.
No, but they could have done something.
Well, no, that's not me excusing it. Especially
no,
because
I know what you mean.
Especially because the Bridgertons are white, and the whole story follows the love lives of each of the
yeah.
Bridgerton children. So, you know, there's some limitations to what you can do with your cast moving mm-hmm. forward. I like all of the performances from pretty much everyone in the cast. I don't think that the cast is bad. I really like them.
No, I think... I'm trying to think. There's really only one character I, like, deeply hate.
But even then, it's not because Antony's actor's performance
no,
was
I
bad.
No, I think we're supposed to not
I like that Antony. I was like, we know it's Antony. Let's
yeah,
just...
it's Antony. but I think
is it Antony or Anthony?
I can't remember. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
We'll clarify after the break. But yeah, like, I think his actor did a good job. I don't think we're supposed to like him. And so I think his actor did what he was supposed to
yes.
do. I found all the characters interesting and
yes.
complex, and I was very happy with the characterization
yeah.
of everybody.
I will say, this won't be a plot spoiler, I won't explain why, but the whole, unfortunately, I don't understand why so many stories are really good at building tension for a romantic couple, but then once they're together,
mm-hmm.
that... interest is gone,
mm-hmm.
but I did experience that here. Like, before Daphne and Hastings become an item,
mm-hmm.
I am much more invested in their relationship
yeah.
than after they become an item. And I hate that because I love having a good romance.
Yeah.
I've also just learned I am a much bigger stickler for a slow burn, and that is not
mm-hmm.
what this is.
I feel like we need to talk more about, you know, once they get together next episode.
Oh, I completely agree.
But once we get there, I have a lot of criticisms about
yes.
the second half of the show.
Oh, I think many do.
I love episode 1-4.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'm like, meh.
Yeah.
But,
okay, here's what I will say. See, episodes 1-4, I'm going to be totally here for Daphne and Duke.
Mm-hmm.
After episodes 1-4, I'm here for everyone and everything else.
Yep.
I am invested in all the other drama. And I think that's a good thing.
I
think it's good that even once the main couple is gone, and
mm-hmm.
we know that the Duke is not returning in later seasons, which, I know, that is...
it's okay.
It's a grievous loss.
You know?
I'm gonna make a list of all of my, like, Duke moments throughout the show, because there's so many moments when I was watching this, and I was, like, the... fish and SpongeBob going humana 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 like that's gonna be
one of our co-workers. Marsha sent me a video and it was just like all the clips of the Duke of Hastings, particularly when he's shirtless, set to Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B's WAP. And she was like, "You're welcome." And that was all the text said. It was just the video. It's great. So shout out to Marsha.
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, I'm very, at first I was really sad he wasn't coming back. But then I learned he's going to be in a movie with Chris Evans. And I'm just like, yeah. I don't know if I can handle the two of them in a film together.
Right.
That's just too
much. What if they're both in cable knit sweaters? I don't know if I...
I would die if they were both in cable knit sweaters.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, so let's talk a little bit about basic plot overview. Bridgerton follows the story.
I guess if we're doing spoilers, we can do pretty light synopsis here since...
Yeah.
Most of our...
Basically, Bridgerton follows lives of the Bridgerton family. Each one of the Bridgerton children has the name of a name that starts with the letter of the alphabet in the order they were born. So this one
follows, which is honestly adorable. It's kind of cute.
So this story, this season in particular, mainly follows Daphne, the fourth child,
and then girl. After this, they go alphabetical, but not for this one.
Yeah. But anyway, so Daphne is basically declared like the best catch, like the hottest debutante,
the diamond of the season.
Yes. So everyone wants to marry her, but her brother's a horrible, annoying person, and we all hate him. So,
no one is good enough.
Yeah, so he basically rejects all of her suitors to the point where no one wants her anymore. So she and the Duke of Hastings, who just does not want to be married, but who has a lot of pressure to, like, get married and go to dances and dance with every girl there, is like, let's make a deal. We're gonna pretend date. This is just every bad fanfiction trope.
Oh, yes.
We're gonna pretend date so that people will leave you alone, or leave me alone, excuse me, and that other men will be interested in you because they want what they can't have.
Yes.
Excuse me.
This show is probably the single tropiest show I've ever seen, and I don't care.
Yeah.
Not a lick. It
literally, when I go to Archive of Our Own, this is the kind of stuff I'm looking up. Like, yes. Pretend dating slow burn.
I wouldn't call this a slow burn.
Episodes 1 through 4 are kind of a slow burn. And then after that, it's
episodes 1 through 4 are a, if not enemies to lovers, a reluctant partnership.
Yeah.
To lovers. And I don't, I guess for me, when I think of slow burn for me is like,
they get together in chapter 50.
Eye contact is like third base. Like, that's that's my definition of slow burn. So, I don't think it's that. And I don't think that the show or the book that it's based on has enough time for it really. Honestly, any book where they're together by the end of the first book, I'm like, that's not a slow burn.
Yeah.
It's gotta be a series. You gotta make me wait for it.
This is what happens when a fan fiction writer turns in, like, a 50-chapter manuscript and the publisher's like, no.
We gotta dial it back.
You get it. I want a fourth of this.
Yes.
And sometimes I think they're right. Because, like, not everyone is as crazy as us.
I agree. I completely agree. And I don't think that it not being a slow burn is a detriment to it by any means. I think it functions well for the story that it is. But it is every, not just trope, but specifically, like, I won't say, here's the interesting thing. It's every romance trope that I like. It's not every period romance trope I like. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of period romance tropes in here that I'm not a big fan of, and we can go into those in more detail afterward. But the romance tropes in episode 1 through 4, mwah, let's go. And it does not hurt that I think Mr. Page is the single handsomest man I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's just not fair.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't.
We both just, like, paused and just, like, stared into space.
Just, like, looked off into the middle distance wistfully.
Yeah. I think
don't even know what to say anymore.
Yeah,
like,
no, I think we should just... I think I should go wash my face mask off because I did not do a peel-off mask. And then I think we should
let the binge-itin begin!
Oh, we don't have tea poured. Pour the tea!
We're back.
Daphne just fell off a horse, but she's fine.
God.
I actually kind of like the duel scene, but we'll get into it.
I have some feels about it.
We'll get into it. I think it's just required in every period drama that's extended. There has to be at least one duel scene.
I'm fine with a good duel. Yeah. There's some things I don't love about it.
But I think we should, now that we've only finished the first four episodes, they are not married, but they will be married post-haste. I think we should talk about something that we didn't remember, but now on a second viewing we didn't like. Mm-hmm. Something we did remember that we didn't like. Something we still like on a second viewing, and then something we forgot about that we like on a second viewing. So let's start with the negative, and then... Or do you want to start with the positive and then the negative?
Let's start with the negative and get positive.
Okay.
So what was the first question again?
What's something that you remembered from the first time that you didn't like and you still didn't like on the second viewing?
The relationship between Benedict and, what's his name, Henry?
Henry.
It's just really queerbaity. They're it's presented like they have some sort of chemistry or they're going to get together. And then they just... don't, and especially knowing that they're not going to, I was just like, they could have set it up to look like a mentor-mentee relationship. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to make it, like, there were weird romantic undertones.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden in the second half of the show, Benedict's gonna be like, I'm not gay, and it's like, I then why did you set it up in this period drama romance show? Why did you have them flirt with each other in front of a painting?
I will say, I think the flirting is much more on Henry's side than Benedict's. Only because when Benedict gets to the art studio, he really is like, nah, I'm just here to draw. But it was also very clear that, like, if he was going to keep coming back, that might shift in transition. Like, that might become something more.
Yeah, but, like... Even from that
point... It's still
point,
queer baiting. I'm not
yeah,
saying
like,
that it's
not. It's a choice. It yeah. was a choice that whoever wrote the show... And I haven't read the book, so I don't know if it's like this in the book. But whoever wrote the particular show, they knew that this is where they were going. And they made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm like, don't waste my time.
Yeah.
Don't waste my time.
I will say, I think it's sort of... reflective of issues with romance novels in general,
mm-hmm.
that they often feel like they need to include some sort of gay character, but mm-hmm. they are never a protagonist because most of the market for romance novels mm-hmm. are heterosexual women.
Yeah.
And so, but they still, like, they always get just basically shoved into the plot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'll jump ahead to, well, I guess we'll kind of continue in this sort of vein, but I'll say that my thing that I didn't remember that I noticed, the last episode, they go to this party that's this weird, eccentric in quotation marks, mm-hmm. party where we talked about, like, the opera singer's there in, like, this weird leotard thing that looks like maybe it came out of, like, a 1910s sideshow rather than a,
yeah,
you know, the 1800s. But there's also, like, all these very androgynous musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And you pointed out that, like, they seem to be there as, like, you know, almost like decor or like this like the commodification of, you know, queer bodies and story arcs, but not actually having those be present. And I hadn't noticed that on the first viewing, but you pointed that out here, and that was something that I had forgotten about, but that I would say that that's probably my biggest issue that I didn't notice on a first viewing that I did notice.
It reminded me of, like, do you remember that song Swish Swish by Katy Perry? Yes. And she, like, performed it, and for whatever reason, she was singing in this, like, jumpsuit that looked like something Beetlejuice would wear. Mm-hmm. And then she just had, like, drag queens dancing in the background, but, like, gave them no credit. Mm-hmm. And they were just, like, props, and then Backpack Kid came out and did his thing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it kind of reminds me of that. Like, they're there as props.
Yes.
And I don't know. It's just annoying. Like, treat them like people. Or if you can't handle doing that, just, like, take your story somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that's my thing that I remembered, and I disliked it the first time, and I disliked it even more this time because I knew where it was going this time.
Right. Speaking of things that we knew where it was going this time, that on a second viewing you and I both felt we did not enjoy as much. I said after I saw this the first time that when it came to Simon and Daphne's relationship, I was super invested for the first four episodes. And then they got married. I honestly kind of like their, like, first night scene, to be honest. But then after that, I just totally lost interest.
Yeah.
And on this viewing, you and I both talked about this feeling of, you know, now that we know they get together, we know where it's heading. So much of this... Oh, shh. Hey, Zoe. Who are you barking at, honey? Stop it.
Zoe doesn't like it either.
No. I don't like their relationship.
No.
In this viewing. Don't get me wrong. Simon is still an absolute snack cake. But I'm realizing that it's much more there for me than for Daphne.
Mm-hmm. The first time I was watching this, I was like, oh, Daphne's pretty cute. And then I was like, Simon is a snack. Yum. And that was kind of what I was thinking. And I was like, oh, get together because I love you both so much. This time, I'm like, wow, Daphne's a horrible person. She's really, really a bad person. And Simon, bless his sweet heart, is an idiot.
Yes.
And the combo of him not using his brain and her being... She does this thing that's annoying. Like, so we just kind of talked about this. We just finished in the fourth episode, there's a duel, and Daphne runs into the duel. She freaking, like, rides her horse between
men with guns.
And then, like, her brother shoots the gun and it spooks the horse and throws her off. And they're freaking out because they're like, oh my god, did he shoot her? And she's like, I'm fine. And I'm like, and Antony's like, you just ran in front of a gun. And literally every other scene in the show, every time Antony says anything, I'm like, shut up, I hate you. But that's the one scene where I'm like, yeah, tell her, Antony.
Yeah,
like,
you got
what a
point.
Dumbass. What a dumbass. And so she makes the worst decisions. But then she does this thing, and I've seen this in, like, some other romance-y kind of shows. So there's a thing that happens, particularly in bad period pieces, mm-hmm. where the woman has no agency. Mm-hmm. But instead of, like, a Pride and Prejudice, where, like, Elizabeth Bennet works within the system to gain her own agency and does so in a way that is empowering. Mm-hmm. Daphne's like, why can't I have agency? Why do all the men get to decide my life? I know. I'm gonna just, like, take away the agency of other people mm-hmm. so that I can have agency. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
Like, she repeatedly, like, steps on Simon's toes and takes away his agency and then is like, I don't know, like... I don't get why Simon likes her, if I'm honest.
Oh, I think that every time. Like, they have this one ball together where they try and have some, like, witty banter back and forth. But honestly, the witty banter's not that great.
No. It's just her being, like, snarky.
Yeah. The one comment, funnily enough, that was made that she made any comment about as being, like, romantic dialogue. Okay, the one thing that he says to her that I was like, dang, was that line about, she's like, you need to send flowers, expensive ones. If you were really courting me, that's what you'd do. Mm-hmm. And he's like, if I were really courting you, I wouldn't need expensive flowers. I'd need 5 minutes alone in a drawing room. And I was like, dang. But then the other one was from the prince. The prince says to her, she's like, he says that women have delicate sensibilities and shouldn't go to boxing matches. Or he's surprised. He doesn't even say they shouldn't go.
Yeah.
He just says, I'm surprised that she would come to a boxing
match. He's like, I thought that was the case.
And she says, well, clearly you've never seen women outside the dress store when there's a silk shortage. Mm-hmm. Like, implying that women will absolutely tear each other's hair out, mm-hmm. which is objectively true.
Right.
And then he's like, well, I look forward to gaining more from your tutelage. And we were both like,
That would absolutely work on me. If a man were like, I don't know about this thing, teach me, I'd be like, oh my God. But yeah, I don't get what Simon sees in her. Simon is a hot mess. He's a hot mess, and he has these moments where he's just, bless his heart, he's got romance brain.
Mm-hmm.
I
was going to say, I don't actually think, you know, you're like, he's an idiot. I don't think he's an idiot.
He just makes bad choices.
I don't even think he makes bad choices. He just has romance man brain, which is, I cannot communicate my true feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some times when that can be an interesting exploration of mm-hmm. toxic masculinity. I cannot tell you what I'm really thinking and feeling because honor or duty or whatever.
Yeah.
But here, there is really no reason at all why, when they are in the midst of their friendship, he can't be like, you know, look, I know that we're doing this, like, ruse thing, but I'm just letting you know. The reason why I can't ever get married has nothing to do with whether a woman is desirable or not. It is because of X, Y, and Z. There's no reason why he can't tell her that.
Yeah.
Except that he's like, no, I can't talk about my feelings.
That's the thing, is this show has this premise of, like, find someone who is your best friend to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if Simon is Daphne's best friend, they both need to, like, raise the bar on best friends. Like, they don't talk.
Yeah.
They don't talk. They know nothing about each other.
No.
And they're like, but we're best friends. No, you're not. You're not best friends. Yeah. You do not talk with each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hate it. But I love the Duke of Hastings, but I don't love him with Daphne.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love Daphne at all.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, this is nothing against her actress. Her actress is wonderful.
She's doing a good job.
I just think she's a bad character.
Yeah.
And I just feel deeply frustrated.
Yeah.
And I was very upset in the last scene when Simon's like, I can't marry you because you deserve the world and I can't give you children and I know you want that. And then he walks away and she's like, there's no need for a duel. The Duke and I are to be married. Like, it's like, just pull him aside and, like, tell him that.
Yeah.
In private. And have that discussion. Don't announce it to everyone.
But that's also the moment when you're like, listen, even if she doesn't know that she loves him yet, if she's able to be like, I'm going to put my family above my desire for children, and I also would not mind being married to you, hint, 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 hint,
yeah.
hint. You know, that's the conversation you need to have. And so, yeah, again, so many romance plots do this, where we have to have miscommunication.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's just something really frustrating about here, because here the miscommunication isn't like a Pride and Prejudice miscommunication, mm-hmm. where it's because someone has blatantly lied,
mm-hmm.
or manipulated the truth.
Yeah.
And two characters genuinely don't have the opportunity mm-hmm. to sit down and clarify things until mm-hmm. it's too late and they've already blown up at each other.
Also, hot take,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to have miscommunication
oh, I
to be like, like, I know you know this, but just to reiterate, like, I'm going to compare this show to Outlander.
Yeah.
Outlander has a lot of things that I don't like about it, particularly. It's really rapey.
I can't watch Outlander.
It makes me kind of uncomfortable with all the, like, rapey elements. However, the one thing that does kind of pull me back is the way that Jamie and Claire treat each other.
They have, for the most part, a very balanced relationship.
And when they do get angry and fight and they, like, pull apart and are distant from each other and, like, have these problems, it is always brought up very successfully that the lack of communication is part of the problem. Uh-huh. And Claire will be like, why won't you talk to me about this thing? Uh-huh. You know, and then there's some big reveal about, like, I can't talk to you because X, Y, Z, I feel this way. And then they work it out. And, you know, Claire doesn't have to take away Jamie's agency. Mm-hmm. And Jamie doesn't have to take away Claire's.
Yeah, right.
And the few times where Jamie does take away Claire, like, there's one part where he, like, in the society, he's, like, expected to, like, beat Claire for doing something, and he does. Yep. And afterwards, he's like, I should never have done that.
Yep.
And then promises to never do it again, well, and then, like, gives her a knife, and she, like, is, like, he basically, like, tries to get her to retaliate. I don't think she does, if I remember.
No, but she says, if you ever do that again, I will murder you.
Yeah, but he's, like, touche, you know? And then there's the part where she's, like, she, like, finally comes clean. Like, she's hiding that she's from the future. But, like, I would, too. People would think you're crazy. But then she finally comes clean to Jamie and tells him the whole story. And he's like, well, I love and trust you, and so I believe you're from the future. And that's it.
Yep.
You know? Like, Outlander is a hot mess because of the things that are occurring around Jamie and Claire's relationship.
Yeah.
Bridgerton is a hot mess because of Duke of Hastings and Daphne's relationship.
So, I agree. I don't think there's really a whole lot more to add on to it. I'm sure we'll discuss much more about their relationship in part two. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I agree that I don't really care for their relationship nearly as much on the second viewing.
So, we've answered something that we...
We remembered that we didn't like.
Something we didn't remember that we didn't like. Okay.
So, what is something that you liked the first time you saw this that you still like just as much on this second viewing?
I like the music.
Mm-hmm.
I like Pin a lot. I think she's my favorite character.
Mm-hmm. I will go ahead and tell you that mine was when Puppy is so whiny this morning.
She wants to go outside.
I will go ahead and tell you that mine is, I remember, watching.
Go upstairs, go see Daddy.
Bye, Puppy.
Hey, Dad? Daddy? Kyle, can you come grab the pool? Being annoying. We call her the poo sometimes on account of her stench.
Be gone, puppy.
Go see him.
So my thing that I remember that I liked, as much as I have issues with Antony, and as much as in the second half of the show I have issues with Mama not having a sit-down conversation with Daphne about the birds and the bees.
Oh, yeah.
I love the Bridgertons as a family.
Yeah.
Anytime the Bridgerton siblings are together, it's so heartwarming.
They're so cute.
I love Violet as a mother.
Mm-hmm.
I love how she calls out Antony on all his BS.
It's great.
I love when the Bridgerton brothers are together. I love Eloise and Daphne's relationship.
Eloise and Benedict.
Oh, they're
my favorite siblings.
They're the best.
Hands down.
I even like the little ones. Like,
yeah, they're cute.
They're so sweet. And it's clear. I love the scene when the Duke comes over and they're all eating at the table together.
It's so cute.
The mother's like, yes, I know it's not really
It's not in fashion.
It's not in fashion, but we like each other. I love seeing it's a family so cute. That likes each other. So the Bridgertons as a family warm my heart. And I think that's also part of why in the second half when Daphne leaves, I'm just like, cool. I'm not, you know, I lose a lot of investment because...
Mm-hmm. I like them all together.
Yeah, I love seeing them all together. Mm-hmm. I will also put on the list Lady Danbury, best character, absolute favorite part of the show.
Best character.
Penn, I'm also in the same boat, but I'll talk about Penn a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I loved Lady Danbury in the first viewing. I love her in the second viewing. She is who I want to be when I grow up.
Yep. I love... There's something about particularly Regency period romance pieces that always have this character, the like wizened old woman, maybe not even wizened, like
clever.
Cunning, clever,
witty,
powerful.
She is
the
so powerful.
The one woman in the society that everyone looks up to and fawns over. You've got your Lady Catherine de Bourgh's, you know, like that kind of character.
But even then... That's a character. A lot of times it's so easy to make her like antagonistic.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, that's where you get like the Queen Charlotte character who is like, I get my way all the time. Mm-hmm. So you talked about, we loved the scene where she's, she has like a contortionist in front of her performing for her to music, but she's sitting there reading Lady Whistledown's article and she's like, I don't want to just, you know, past the season. I want to be entertained.
She's got entertainment right in front of her, but it's not enough.
It's such a good scene.
Yeah. And she says that through the contortionist's legs. Yeah. It's such a good shot, too.
But Lady Danbury still has this deep-seated goodness. I love all the flashbacks where she is, like, raising Simon. Like,
she reminds me of, like, when you think back to, like, high school and there's like or college or whatever and there's that one teacher, that one professor who just like believes in you despite all odds.
She's the McGonagall. Like,
yes, that's Lady Danbury.
You are going to be successful, darn it. Like I really like that about her. And
I like how she treats Simon. I like that she simultaneously is kind to him but also doesn't put up with his nonsense.
Right.
Also, her fashion taste is just
impeccable.
So impeccable.
The hats for days.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
The cane, she works that cane.
It's like she doesn't even need it. It's just there for, like, the sheer swagger of it all.
Yes.
And I'm here for it. So, yeah, I definitely, I very much enjoy Lady Danbury. Forgetting, so this question is, what is something that we remembered
you
liking?
You remembered liking the first time and you still liked this time.
Okay,
you mentioned
okay.
The music.
Yeah.
The aesthetic as a whole is a big one for me.
Yeah. I have another negative about something that has to do with, like, costuming and aesthetics, but I'll hold on to it. We'll come back to it later. Overall, I just think that the visuals of the show are pretty solid. I think that
the sets are gorgeous.
The sets are gorgeous.
The Bridgerton house is one of the most beautiful interiors I've ever seen.
The Bridgertons are very likable when they're together. The mother is great. I love the mother and Lady Danbury together and their little plot.
When they're at the opera together, they're like, hey.
And I love the moments of... Because here's the thing is like... I feel like this is going to sound bad, but I don't know a way to say it. So, this is... Here's the thing. In a society that's flawed, one person screaming about the necessity for change doesn't really do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of organize, right? And so that's like, you know... One woman saying that it's not fair is not the same as, like, the suffragettes rising up and fighting for our right to vote. Or, you know, like, a women's march or something. So, like, but then there's these moments in the show where you have these female characters who work within the systems they're given to undermine, like, patriarchal, like, rules that are put in place. And I find that it's not that it's wrong for Daphne to be like, it's not fair that I can't be in the room, blah, blah, blah. I totally get it. And I would probably feel that way too. I would probably feel that angry. It's just that I find the workarounds as a plot device way more interesting. Yes. Like, I like seeing these women be like, we're in a tight spot. Like, Antony is being dumb and he's ruining our lives. Because he's in charge, even though he doesn't know what he's doing, and that's dumb. We're gonna use, though, the tools at our disposal to undermine him. I find that really fun and engaging.
I love the plot line where they get the servants to gossip, and that's how they get the dirt on Burbrook and get him out of town.
That's exactly what I was thinking about. Yeah. Like, that's my favorite. And it's definitely the thing, like, again, with Daphne, and I wouldn't even mind, I think, if Daphne was so, like, if she had this whole, like, I'm not, you know, it's not fair that nobody's listening to me kind of outburst, if she then, like, to me, it's just a bad look if you are going to, like, be disrespectful to the people around, like, you're gonna be like, it's not fair that no one is listening to me,
yeah,
and then proceed to not listen. Yeah. To, like, your partner.
Well,
so, I don't know. I think, honestly, if anyone besides... Because when Eloise is like, it's not fair, I'm like, you're right, Eloise, tell him. But when Daphne does it, I'm like, shut up, Daphne.
So, funnily enough, I'm actually not as on the Eloise love train as, like, everyone else is. It's not that even that I don't like her. Mm-hmm. I like Eloise as a character. I like this character who is just objectively, no, I don't want to be on the marriage market, and I'm dreading my sister getting married because then I'm getting shoved to the front of the line. I completely understand
that. I like her arc, and I like her more at the end of the season than I do at the beginning.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But we talked about this. One of my favorite scenes in this is when Eloise comes to Penelope in the middle of the night being like, I think I've figured out some hints about who, you know, Lady Whistledown is, and she's like, chattering on. I love watching it with the knowledge of Penelope in it, because everything she says is so insulting to Penelope.
It, like, is.
She has to be alone. She's someone who no one pays attention to.
Who no one listens to.
She must be a widow. Like she's saying all these horrible things, and poor Penelope just has to stand there and take it. But then when Penelope snaps back at Eloise, I'm kind of totally on
Penelope's side. Hands down.
Yeah. She says, you know, like, You just assume that I'm not worried about getting married because you're not. Mm-hmm. And Eloise
projects everything onto Pen.
Well, and I think she does onto Daphne as well.
Yeah.
And so the fact that a large part of her arc, I hope that her arc becomes more about really listening to other people and trying to understand their concerns. I think she does that a little bit with Daphne.
And I think, you know, you mentioned this, and we haven't gotten there yet, because we've only watched episodes 1 through 4, or rewatched them, but if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure she and Pen do make up, and she admits that she hasn't been listening to Pen.
Yes, I agree.
And I think what I do appreciate about Eloise is I think she sometimes is so... She has, like, blinders on. Mm-hmm. Like, she only sees the world through her lens. And so people who don't act like her, she kind of dismisses them, or
she has, thinks that I'm she's not better like than other girls syndrome.
She does, but she kind of, to me it seems at least, like she starts letting go of that this season. And I hope they continue.
Right.
Now I hope that doesn't become like, I don't know that that needs to become like a, oh, maybe I am like other girls. I mean, it, you know, I don't want her to lose what makes her Eloise. Mm-hmm. Even if she does get married or whatever. Like, I don't really care, you know, as long as the plot's good, like, there are ways that they could do that. And I'd be like, that's okay. Right. But I like that Eloise, I want her to just be this kind of character that evolves to be kind of, you know, the cool, awesome, compassionate person that I think she could be.
Right.
I will say that, okay, so my favorite thing about rewatching this, something that, it's not that I didn't remember, it's just that I didn't notice the first time. Mm-hmm. Rewatching this knowing, spoiler alert, that Pen is Lady Whistledown.
It's great.
I mean, every scene, every big moment in the show, you can see Pen in the shot. like the big like shocking moments where like Daphne and the Duke first dance, they cut to Pin right before them and you're like, why? Now we know. When Daphne and the prince start their thing, who's right in the shot? Pin. And we just see that over and over again. And there's all these like little hints. Like there's this moment where Pin says something about like the hostess of one of their parties who has a baby. She's like, oh, I bet the father is like one of her servants. Look at that guy there. And she says something and Colin's like, Pin, like that's so scandalous. And then you real like, but watching it again, you're like, because Pin has that eye. Pin is watching. Noticing. She's noticing these things. She's always on the sidelines. Like, notice it. Seeing how, you know, I mean, I understood where her pain came from a little bit the first time she fought with Eloise. But it completely recontextualizes it when you hear how Pin describes Lady Whistledown as someone who's, like, not listened to, who's on the sidelines, who's ignored. And, like, when Penelope has her outburst, knowing, like, with the context of having just heard Lady Whistledown basically be insulted.
Yeah.
Knowing that she is Lady Whistledown makes the scene so good.
Yeah.
And it, just all of that. Like, there are scenes where if you pay attention, everyone is reading Lady Whistledown and Pin has the Lady Whistledown in her hand but is watching how people are reacting to
it. She's handing it to one of her sisters and looking at her sister's face. Like, I like that a lot.
I do too. So that, I think that was probably one of my favorite things about rewatching it.
That was what I was going to say was like, the thing I didn't notice on the first viewing that I did on the second that I really, really enjoyed a lot more. She's one of my favorite characters. So that was probably my big, like, what's something I liked on a second viewing more than on the first. Mm-hmm. I am more invested in Penelope's character knowing that she's Lady Whistledown. But I will say, it doesn't take away the fact that I enjoyed the first viewing having the mystery of who is Lady Whistledown, because I remember saying that for the first two episodes, I was certain that it had to be like a servant gossip chain. And then when Eloise confronts the servants and she's like, are you an idiot? I'm like, hey, leave me alone. Like, I felt so called out by it.
That's funny.
So I like... And then, spoilers for the second half of the season, when they basically had the fake out of it was the dress shop owner, I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I was like, this is the reveal. And I remember being a little disappointed in it, but then when they said it was Penelope, I was like, nope, I'm here for it again. Yeah. I love it.
I remember always thinking that it had to be somebody with money, because the pamphlets were delivered for free, and printing was, it still isn't cheap.
Okay, I will say, here's my question, though. The pamphlets were delivered for free the first time. I'm wondering if there's a charge for them on the second time.
I don't know. They never address that.
Because one of the servants is like, do you think if I were making money like Lady Whistledown, I would be concerned. And I also then wonder, if she's not charging, is she going to start when the father's financial ruin comes crashing down?
I can't stand him.
But I will say, that is actually one of my favorite arcs of the entire show.
It's a really good arc, but yeah, God, he's infuriating.
He's horrible. But I like it being a different dowry story than what we're used to seeing. Because usually the father is just poor and doesn't have enough and he feels guilty for it. Or it's, you know, oh, this other richer girl has a better dowry than me, whatever. But in this one, I don't know. I'm really intrigued by the idea of, no, you're going to ruin your daughter's chances at happiness by chasing away other men because you don't have a dowry.
Yeah.
And what was also part of the tragedy for me, for Philippa, the daughter who was being courted, who he chased the young man away. And I think he does show up again at the end.
Yeah, he does.
A chance. But, like, you know, he said something to him. I don't think he said anything about dowry.
I don't think he did either. I think he said to stay away from her.
I genuinely think that young man might have still married her.
I agree.
Without a dowry. And, but in the society, you don't get the opportunity to even see that. Mm-hmm. So I'm...
Yeah.
I'm curious and fascinated by this. Yeah, well, I'll talk more about Lord Featherington at the end of the series. I know that you talked about, like, could not forgive him or stay with him once he bartered away your children's dowry.
I mean, in this society, you would have to stay with him.
Yeah.
But I would not, like, he starts crying and he, like, hugs her and she looked all shocked. I'd be like, do not touch me.
I actually really like that scene only because I love the power play between Portia and him when he lights that candle and she's just sitting there in the darkened library.
I like this scene. I just find him infuriating. Like, that, you know the meme where it's like, I must beg your forgiveness, and it's like, then beg.
Yeah.
Like, that would be my reaction. Like, if I was married to someone who gambled my money away, that would hurt.
Children's money
but if
away.
They gambled my children's money away, I'd be like, I will forgive you when you fix it.
Yeah.
Go get the money so our children can get married. Screw you. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, can we take a quick second? So, originally, I said something beforehand. I was like, I don't mind the historical inaccuracies. I lied a little bit. Watching it a second time, I realized there are some things that bug me. And they're not the things that I think people think about when we talk about historical inaccuracies. But I want to take a minute and point out some of the things that I dislike. Okay, so, again, like, I love the casting. I'm not here like, oh, well, that's not historically accurate. I don't care. I love most of the costumes. I don't care that they're historically inaccurate. I don't love Daphne's bangs or Eloise's bangs. They're historically inaccurate.
I don't love any of Daphne or Eloise's outfits, except when Daphne is, like, dressed to kill. So, like, yeah. When she goes to meet the queen, love it. When she comes in to flirt with the prince and she's in all white, love it.
Yeah.
Other than that, nah, brah.
No, but like, I mean, the bangs are super inaccurate, but that doesn't bug me that much. But here's what bugs me. Two things. There are several scenes where men refer to the women they are thinking about marrying, and they literally check them over like they are animals to buy.
Yes.
Here's the thing. A society can be misogynistic without being blatant about it.
Yes.
And Regency era courting, to my knowledge, was not like that.
No. I mean, here's the thing. Like, it's always going to... I think it's important to examine themes of objectification of women.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is a detriment when the only way you do it is through having characters like the leering wealthy man who's coming to check out Marina Thompson. He's literally like, show me your teeth, girl. Like,
yeah.
You know, do you have good birthing hips? Like, of course that exists out there. But when that's all that you see in media, it's very easy for people who maybe are actually have misogynistic thoughts to be like, well, I'm not like that guy, so
right.
I cannot be sexist.
Right.
So I agree with that. I think it's problematic. I also think that it is so hyper-exaggerated. Mm-hmm. I will say, I think the best display of misogyny in the show is Antony, and I think Antony is actually very realistic.
Yes.
Because his response is, every time his mother criticizes him and says, like, you're not doing right by this family, isn't to sit down and go, okay, what do I need to do to better consider what is best for my sister? Instead, he goes, I am man, I fix problem.
Yeah.
And that is actually a very good picture of it.
Yeah.
So I actually think Antony is a much better display than this whole idea of, quick, we need to get you on the market. And,
right.
You know.
I agree, but I just feel like it's... I feel like if if you were to have a more nuanced depiction of the kind of misogynistic tendencies, particularly of this time period, it'd be easier to see, like, how it reflects on our own society, but it's also, like, just more interesting to talk about, I think. And I'm gonna get to my second point in a minute, but something that I think that's really dangerous about that, and that's why, like, again, I don't mind historical inaccuracies that are, like, not dangerous, you know? Like casting whoever you want to film. Mm-hmm. Having outfits that aren't perfect or accurate to the time. Having fabrics and textiles on the furniture or the clothing that's not perfectly accurate to the time. That doesn't bug me. What bugs me are historical inaccuracies that are harmful. Because, like, for example, when we look at the past and we say, oh, those people were so barbarous, it's a good thing we're not like that today. Mm-hmm. What you actually do is, one, you vilify people in the past, and by doing so, you remove yourself of responsibility from the tendencies that we still hold.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's a problem. The other thing that I hate...
I wonder if we're about to say the exact same detail, and I'll let you know if we do or not.
Probably. The other thing that I hate very, very much... And this is the hill that I will die on. Ladies, if you are wearing a bra, there is a good chance that your bra is not fitted correctly and that it is actually hurting you, digging into your shoulders, poking you. That's very, very common. Sometimes, especially if bras are bad, they can cause other issues that may even lead to, like, poor posture. Breast weight in general can lead to poor posture, which can lead to back troubles. Mm-hmm. And actually, corseting is not inherently bad for you. Mm-hmm. It's not a terrible contraption. It's not something that is...
It does not rearrange your organs.
No. Can it? Yes. But when did it ever rearrange your organs? During a very, very brief, like, ish 5 to 10 year history or period of history, there were, like, kind of two waves in history where tight lacing became a trend. Tight lacing is what you see in movies when they lace it so tight that every element of the corset fits together perfectly and it cinches their waist really, really tiny. This did not happen except for in, like, two small points in history. During the Regency era, corsets did not go to your hips. There were Regency stays or Regency corsets that only covered your boobs and the upper part of your ribs. They look much similar to what modern bras look like.
Which makes sense because when you're wearing that empire waist, you don't even see the shape of your waist.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, wearing a corset under that dress, which Daphne does in one scene, and it drives me bonkers.
So do the Featherington girls.
When the wind blows, you can see her corset and it doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look natural. It doesn't look pretty. You see bones of the corset sticking out and it's an ugly silhouette. The corset should match the style of dress. And when, again, this is another one of those things, when you perpetuate myths about corsetry, mm-hmm. what you're doing is creating harmful beliefs about corsetry, which then go on to basically, like bras are not the best design. Mm-hmm. We as a society could come up with something better mm-hmm. to help women, like, you know, contain the girls. But we don't, because we sit there and we're like, well, at least we're not wearing corsets. But it's like,
yeah.
Corsets aren't evil. They're not, they're neutral. You know, they, is tight lacing good for you? No, it's terrible for you. But it doesn't mean that that's all corsetry is. And it doesn't mean that most women in society, even when tight lacing was popular, tight lacing was done on formal occasions and was not an everyday thing.
Yeah, and you never did it on direct skin. You always had a chemise underneath.
Yes.
So the shots when you see, like, them having, like, wounds in their backs from the corsetry.
That doesn't happen.
That is not historically accurate.
No, none of it is. And it just drives me bonkers.
When I said that this show has, like, every romance trope that I am stupid for. So things like fake dating, reluctant partnership to lovers, a duel for no reason in the middle of the plot, the, you know, the girl who is pining after a very kind boy, but who doesn't see her for her value. You know, all those things, when I said that it has a lot of period tropes that I don't care for, the corsets as female oppression is a big one.
Yeah.
Because it either does one, it either perpetuates one of two myths. It either perpetuates the myth of, like, men forced women into corsets, which is absolutely not true. Mm-hmm. Men never paid any attention to women's undergarments.
The fashion industry decides the undergarments.
Yes.
Men can be a part of the fashion industry, but it is a huge system.
Yeah. But otherwise, it goes into this, like, wow, these silly women who would do anything to get a husband.
Yeah.
And no, that also, I think, is like you said, it's a kind of dangerous stereotype to perpetuate. So, but again, I keep coming back to this. Any problem that exists within Bridgerton, aside from the issues we talked about with, like, the you know, rewriting history in a potentially problematic way, racially speaking, other than that, all the problems with Bridgerton all point back to issues within kind of the limitations of the romance genre tropes. And I don't really read those kind of books, so I don't really know how much it has evolved in recent years. I do know that there seem to be three main categories of romance novels, either, like, Amish romance for women who just want, like, kiss and get married at the end. Harlequin romance like this, which is, you know, I want to escape to another time period and have this fully fledged fantasy that does have sex in it. Or you just go in 50 shades, like, nah, I'm just here for smut.
The sex, yeah.
Set it in the modern day, I don't care. And I think there's issues with all three genres. Not to say that there's anything wrong with any of those particular fantasies or those tastes in romance.
Yeah. And literature can be escapism, and it doesn't always, there's this notion that I see a lot of, like, especially young people on the internet talk about today, where it's like, oh, it's problematic. I'm like, yeah, everything we look at is problematic. Like, we can talk about something that's problematic, but just because I talk about something in Bridgerton that's problematic doesn't mean I also can't enjoy Bridgerton.
It's garbage, but
it's our still garbage, right?
At the end of the day, I'm still like, this is still the most Lizzie aesthetic I have ever
seen.
Say,
I didn't like it as much on a second viewing.
Really?
Yeah, I liked it a lot more the first time, but that wasn't like a, honestly, the reason that I didn't like it is kind of silly. It's not that I didn't like it. I just didn't like it as much on a second viewing. And the reason why is very dumb. So talking about, like, I don't read a lot of, like, independent romance stories. However,
meaning,
I read,
meaning the sole purpose of the book is romance.
No, meaning,
or
like,
the main plot line is romance?
The writer creates characters and puts them in a book. I read a lot of fan fiction.
Understood.
So I don't buy my romance novels. I read them for free on the internet.
Yeah.
And they star characters from whatever show I'm into at the moment.
I'm funny in that I dabble in fan fiction periodically. I don't read a lot of it, but almost anything I read, aside from classics like a Jane Austen, I love stories that have romance in them, but I don't tend to gravitate towards something that's a pure romance. It's been a while since I've read a pure romance, so I kind of want, I'm curious to try it, dip my feet into it again.
In terms of fan fiction, though, here's what I find disappointing about Bridgerton. I could find something better for free on the internet. It would be equally as problematic, but it doesn't have a lot of the, like, plot flaws that I see, or the character flaws. There's just something about And, you know, there are fan fictions out there that are garbage. They are. You have to hunt for the good ones. But they're there. Mm-hmm. And what they get right, boy, they get so right. They get it so right, and it's free. And I don't know, there's just something about watching a show that does romance tropes and being like, I literally read, like, a Regency period Castlevania AU, like, a week ago that did the Jane Austen, like, subplot better than this.
Right.
So, you know, like, heck, I read, like, a Kingdom Hearts, like, Jane Austen. Yeah, it wasn't great, but they're there. You can find your Regency stuff.
I am sure they are there.
Y'all didn't see my
eyebrows about jump off my forehead when Liv said that.
One time I read a Kingdom Hearts fan fiction that was an AU that was set in like 1776, and one of the characters was the son of like a patriot, and the other character was, it was prior to 1776. It was, what was that act that,
Stamp Act?
No, it was the act that British soldiers had to be housed.
Oh, the,
I don't remember what it's called.
Oh my gosh. I don't remember.
But the point is there was a law that British soldiers had to be housed in American homes. So it was like, the couple was, a patriot and the British soldier that was in the house, and I was like, ooh, and it was kind of good. I was like, somebody needs to write like an actual romance like this. But it's really embarrassing that I just admitted that like in public.
I'm not gonna make you say who the characters are, especially
I won't do it. A lot of your listeners
probably already know, so
I won't do it.
I'm gonna just leave it be.
But the point is they exist, and they do a lot of the tropes, and they build the tension better than Bridgerton has, and a lot of them do it in ways, here's what I like, I love a good romance where the plot facilitates tension in a way that doesn't cause romance brain, like where the characters don't do dumb stuff
just because
they need it for the plot.
I agree.
And I feel like I've read things that are more successful at that than Bridgerton. And like I said, I haven't read the books, so I don't know if the books maybe handle things better.
I don't know that I have much interest in reading
the first book,
especially just because I know what happens in the second half of the show, and I'm not really interested in reading that.
I've heard the book is worse with the second half of the show. We'll talk about that next time.
Yeah. So I guess we will save further comments for next time.
Mm-hmm.
We will watch episodes 5 through 8 next, and we will let you all know.
We'll Bridger that ton.
We still gotta figure out what the ton is.
What is the ton?
I mean, clearly from context clues, it's referring just to the society of people who are here for the season.
But I've never heard that prior to this.
Yeah.
And like, maybe I just don't know my historical. Yeah.
We should also make a list of historical things that they talk about in this show that we're like, huh, never heard about that before. Mm-hmm. We'll look into this. So
what was the one?
Leading strings.
Leading strings. We learned about leading strings today.
It was basically a child leash / something you use to help train your child to walk. They were literally strings you tied to your baby.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that before, but it's a real thing. So maybe the ton is a real thing too.
Yeah, we'll look into it.
Yeah. So thanks for sticking along with us for our first ever binge watch of a show. It's been fun. We'll have one more episode to finish out the season of Bridgerton. Let us know if you like us talking about TV shows. Maybe we'll do these more often.
Yes.
I already have
my next one lined up, so yes, we're going to do
this. Is it Shadow and Bone?
Hell yes!
Okay.
You want some good tension built up over the course of the show?
Good.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Okay. Well, tune in next week for Bridgerton Part 2. And until then, enjoy your week, dear readers.
Bye.
Thanks for hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at Liv and Lizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trash you feel, you are deeply treasured.
Bye!